environmentally sound for your mind. HRNradio.com.
Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to Powell to the People, live on the radio. I'm Wayne Powell, and we have a really exciting and informative show for you today. We have Deanne Chase of the Chase Law Group. Welcome, Deanne.
Hello. Hi, Wayne. Nice to see you.
I thought you were going to say long time no see, because just yesterday morning, Deanne was the, I believe, one of the youngest members. Oh, that was the chamber. You were an officer of the Manhattan Beach Kiwanis Club.
That's right.
And so yesterday morning, or if you're listening at a different time, maybe not quite yesterday morning, but...
November 25th.
Whatever. the Kiwanis Club had their first annual holiday pancake breakfast, and it was fantastic.
It was amazing. We were so happy with the turnout. I'm a three-time past president of the Manhattan Beach Kiwanis Club and currently a member of the board of directors. Mm-hmm. And I'm also president of the scholarship fund. So Suzanne Carger, one of our newest members, she did all the planning for that event, and it turned out fantastic. I think we served over 200 pancakes to families in the South Bay. It was very exciting.
And for a first-time event, that's a lot of people. And they had the Santa float, which tonight is the first night that it makes its rounds, and there's a different route every day. If you go to ManhattanBeachSantaFloat.com, there's the Manhattan Beach Santa Tracker or Santa Float Tracker. You can Google it, and it'll come up. Mm-hmm. But you can actually track the movement. And it also has the route, so each day a different organization are the elves, and I'm going to be on it a couple of evenings, although it looks like one evening, maybe not, because if it rains, they don't repeat that route, so fingers crossed. Yeah. But Santa was there, people were getting photos for their holiday cards, and mm-hmm. it was just all around a great event. And Jack Tracy was singing and playing the ukulele.
It was wonderful.
And when you listen to the end of this show, you'll hear him singing and playing the ukulele, his theme song of, Powell to the People. As we go off the air. The beginning, everyone always asks me, who's that that sings your theme song and the commercial bumpers? And that's Kevin Sousa. Anyways, we're here to talk about business law. But first, I want to give you a little information about Deanne Chase, and who's the founder of the Chase Law Group, which is a Manhattan Beach firm dedicated to providing responsive client services and creative legal solutions. Deanne and her team of experienced attorneys work with business owners and many professionals to help them set up and maintain legal structures that form the foundation for a successful business while providing personal liability protection for its owners and their families. Her firm takes an innovative, holistic approach to advise businesses on business entity structures, partnerships, franchises, contracts, trademarks, leases, and employee and independent contractor issues, and I think a whole lot more as well.
That's a lot.
And we're going to talk about that throughout the show. Deanne has been practicing law for over 20 years and has spent her entire law career advising and defending businesses of all sizes. She began her career as a litigator, which gives her a unique perspective to provide businesses with a preventive and comprehensive approach to business planning and operations. Deanne received the Woman of Entrepreneurship Award from Comerica Bank and the Los Angeles Lakers, and recognition from the Manhattan Beach City Council for her service to the community. And and as if that wasn't enough, she was just named one of South Bay Magazine's 2018 Trusted Advisors. And we're not giving out any legal advice on the show, just general information. You heard the disclaimer, and I thought the disclaimer was so that when I get out of control, I'm the one that gets sued, not the station. But she served as chair of the board of directors of the Manhattan Beach Chamber of Commerce and as president of the Manhattan Beach Kiwanis Club. Well, you know that. She said that earlier, where she was their first female president. So that's outstanding. Dan earned her law degree from Southwestern University and her bachelor's degree from the University of California at Berkeley. You can learn a lot more about Deanne and her firm by visiting their website, which is chaselawmb.com. All right. Well, and we could do a whole show on her background, but that tells you a lot about Deanne, who I've known for years, and most particularly her law firm. Just to repeat, your firm specializes primarily in business and commercial law. And so I want to talk about the different services that the Chase Law Group provides, which include entity structures such as LLCs, corporations, and partnerships, intellectual property. For the longest time when I heard intellectual property, and it's like, so what does that mean? Well, what it means is trademarks, copyrights, trade secrets, and some other things as well. Of course, we want to talk about contracts, employment law, and this is from the business aspect, and particularly one issue, which is when someone's an employee or an independent contractor.
That's right.
An IRS distinction. As well as real estate, which includes commercial leasing, real estate investments, and purchases. So let's start out with first the basics, you know, the structure, because sometimes people say, should I be a corporation? Should we be a partnership? Should it be an LLC? Talk about that.
Sure. So, yeah, I mean, I've been working with businesses for a really long time, and I have a lot of people come to me and say, should I form a business entity for my business? A lot of people, they talk to their accountants, and the accountants will say, oh, you can wait until you make, you know, X number of dollars. You know, just rely on your insurance. Make sure you have insurance, which I agree, you need to have insurance. But insurance is about exclusions and limits. So I recommend having a business entity from day one. And my personal preference is for an LLC, a limited liability company. Some individuals cannot be LLCs, such as professionals, dentists, orthodontists, veterinarians, court reporters, a broad range of professionals need to be a professional corporation.
Also known as a PC.
A PC, that's right.
Not politically correct.
No, no, that's something different. And then some other what I call pseudo professionals in the law, meaning they're not a professional services organization for purposes of the statutes. I still recommend corporations for those, and that's usually general contractors and real estate brokers and agents because of their governing agencies.
So, like you say, while you definitely should have errors and omissions insurance and other liability insurance, you should also have a corporate entity that has limited liability. So you're limited either to your investment amount in the firm, or there's other limiting factors.
Yeah, absolutely. So generally speaking, for a small business, you'll have a commercial general liability insurance policy. And nowadays, I also am recommending that my clients who are employers have an employer's EPLI, employer's limited liability insurance policy.
Mm-hmm.
So, because we love our employees, but as a practical matter, a lot of my business clients are seeing a lot of exposure from claims from their employees.
So if you have an employee that's negligent, let's say gets in an auto accident, or does anything that where he or she are negligent, but it's within the scope of, you know,
their employment,
mm-hmm. Then you as the owner, unless you have any of those other mechanisms, can be sued as well. And they could take all of your assets, even though you really didn't have much to do with it.
Well, that's right. I mean, and this is why I'm a huge proponent of having insurance, but the right kind is really important. So under your scenario, if an employee is driving a vehicle and the employee gets in an accident, you should also have a commercial auto policy as well. So yeah. Talk to your insurance brokers because they your general liability policy doesn't cover an auto claim, and for home-based businesses as well, really important on talking about insurance is that their homeowner's policy won't generally cover a commercial loss. So you need to let your insurance carrier know you're running a home-based business and get a rider on your policy or whatever your your broker recommends.
But. So that's one of the advantages of having a business attorney is not only will they tell you the type of legal entity that you should be, but they also tell you other things like what type of insurance to get or contact an insurance agent to learn more about, you know, the liability, various liability policies.
Right. Well, because we've been in the South Bay for so long. I mean, I've lived in Manhattan Beach and Hermosa Beach for over 20 years. We have a really deep network locally. So we try to be a resource for our clients with regard to insurance brokers, bankers, accountants, and a broad range of other professionals that we work with.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I want to talk about the next subject. And some time ago, I had a really interesting individual. He was one of the original employees of the original Mattel, and he worked in their think tank. And they would come up with all kinds of ideas and inventions, you know, like the Barbie doll or Ken or Hot Wheels. He said, yeah, we work with, you know, he would always say the people in the office or I forget what the term he used. When I asked him, what does that mean? He said, well, of course, the founder and president and CEO of Mattel. But then he said, and the people in the suits. And then he said, you know, the lawyers. And he said, because, you know, trademarks, copyrights, service marks, patents, trade secrets, all of that has to be protected because otherwise someone can steal your latest and greatest invention or idea. And, you know, you don't want that to happen. So let's talk about intellectual property.
Sure. Well, what I see for my business clients is a broad range of things. I see either companies who are just getting started or who've been doing business for a while where they've picked a name for their business. Your trademark is your name for your business. You can trademark your logo. You can trademark a tagline. But I find that they don't do a comprehensive search across the United States Patent and Trademark Office and in general on the use of the name. So I see a lot of small businesses that are getting sued or getting cease and desist letters from other companies that have already registered a particular trademark, for example. So really important for a business owner to do a trademark search and analysis of their name before they invest in branding. And then also, I think it's important when businesses are hiring companies to create intellectual property, you know, a design for your logo, for example, that the contracts are really important to protect the intellectual property by saying, for example, having what's called a work made for hire clause in the agreement. So if you generally hire someone to create, you know, a pretty logo for you, by default, that person as a contractor service provider technically owns the intellectual property rights to the logo. So you need to have a contract that says that that's what's called a work made for hire in that you're paying them to create that pretty logo and that you actually own all of the rights to the logo, for example. So trade secrets are important as well for people when you're talking about, you know, that example of someone being in the room talking about intellectual property, it's really important that you have trade secret protection, whether it's from an employee who later leaves the company and wants to use maybe something that they created while they were your employee. Technically, you own that. Mm-hmm. But a lot of times I have business owners who want to try to keep their current employees from competing with them by saying, I'm going to put a non-competition provision in an employment agreement, for example, which is generally unenforceable as a matter of law. So those are, you know, things to think about is, and even your business partners, for example, if you have a business partner who leaves, protecting your company's trade secrets and intellectual property. There are a lot of different things we deal with on a daily basis.
So that person doesn't leave and then do everything that you were doing and then also take all of the clients away and then you're left with nothing.
Right, exactly. You're left to compete.
Well, so you mentioned that a covenant not to compete or non-compete clause, even if it's reasonable, like it says for a period of 1 year, you cannot do that. Those are not enforceable now?
They are not enforceable as a matter of law. The only time, generally speaking, in the state of California that a non-competition agreement could be enforceable is in the event of a sale of a business that involves a sale of goodwill. So a lot of times if you have a business owner that sells their business assets, including the goodwill of the business, then the state of California will protect the rights of the buyer to be free from competition, specifically from, you know, the seller.
Mm-hmm.
Other than that, it's generally unenforceable, but a lot of people don't know that. I mean, I see it all the time in many, many types of contracts, whether, you know, employee manuals. I see it in employment agreements. I see it in a lot of different contexts.
So people always ask, you know, so what is the difference between a trademark, a copyright, a service mark, and a patent? And then maybe there's other things as well.
So a trademark is technically is for the sale of goods, and a service mark is a trademark that relates to the sale of services, essentially. So that's the difference between a trademark and a service mark. And that generally relates to identification of the source of the goods or services that are being provided, and that's usually by way of the company name or a logo or a tagline. So that's really the main focus of what we do on, from the trademark perspective. A copyright relates to, you know, an original work of authorship, mm-hmm. right? And it relates to a book, an article, you know, a website, verbiage, software. You know, if you write software, for example, you can copyright the software. So those are copyrights. And then patents relate to inventions. And so, you know, a lot of people who come up with a new gadget for an iPhone or what have you will look at potentially trying to patent their invention. And there are a lot of limits on how that all works as well.
Okay. And again, we're not giving out legal advice.
No, this is for educational purposes only.
General information, and the laws differ from state to state as well. So mostly you're probably going to be referring to California law.
Although intellectual property, that's federal. So the trademark, copyrights, and patents are on a national basis.
Okay, and I actually have firsthand knowledge because in the leadership Manhattan Beach class that I was in, we actually produced a DVD called Bridging the Generations.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was
an intergenerational
thing. Well, the class decided we wanted to protect it so somebody wouldn't rip us off and copy it and, or make something very similar and then sell it for profit. Ours wasn't for profit. And so they said, let's get it copyrighted. We had two attorneys in the class, and each of them said they would do it gratis.
Mm-hmm.
But by the time we were getting down to the end, they were way too busy. And so I was volunteered to do that. I'm not an attorney.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, well, just go to one of those $99 sites, which
me.
I did.
Oh, no.
And then I was reading this and that, and it's like, well, I don't have a clue what this is. And I'd Google this and Google that, and I talked to some friends that were attorneys. And the long and short of it is we have a copyright. And I was, when I entered the data, I was the transmitter, and the leadership Manhattan Beach organization was the copyright owner. Well, when I got the patent,
had your name on it.
I was
when you got the copyright.
and it's like, oh, so now what do I have to do? And okay, well, that's getting off the track.
That's right. You assign it to the organization.
Yeah. Well, that's exactly what we did.
Yeah, there you go.
but that's why you really shouldn't be a do-it-yourself lawyer. Speaking of which, the next item is contracts, because whenever you have an agreement, you should always have it in writing, and mm-hmm. it should be a document that's legally enforceable. So talk about contracts in the business setting.
Oh, there are so many different contracts that are so important for businesses. Like you mentioned earlier, I take a holistic approach. So I always start at the foundation. So one of the most important contracts to have, if you have a partner, is basically your partnership agreement, right? So it can be called a buy-sell agreement. If you have a, if you have a corporation, it's called a, you know, stockholders agreement. It could be called, in the LLC, you'll have an operating agreement. But, the most important thing for partners is to have their exit strategy in place, right? And to document what their intentions are, whether someone, you know, dies, is disabled, divorce, all those sorts of things. So that's really a primary contract to have in place. And then I believe every business should have a customized contract for their ongoing relationships, particularly with their clients. I see many times business owners will go, you know, research online. They'll either take a contract they get from someone else in the industry, or they'll take it off, you know, off the computer somewhere. And I say it's like taking somebody else's medicine. You don't know necessarily whether or not that contract fits your business. But I also say, I call it living with your contract. You have to know what your contract says, and you have to be able to enforce it. So that's really an important contract for business owners to have, is a regular contract they use time and time again, whether it's a consulting agreement, it's a proposal, it's a vendor agreement. So those are the primary ones.
And you mentioned exit strategy. Most people, when they, or partners, or you know, individuals, when they form a business, they think it's going to last forever. But then there are times when there's a parting of the ways, and you should have something that dictates how things are going to be separated, because at that point, then things sometimes get kind of hectic, or what would be a better word? It could be
contentious.
Contentious.
Adversarial.
Yeah. Bad things.
Bad things happen.
Always
right.
Be prepared. And on that note, we're going to take a quick commercial break. You're listening to Powell to the People on the Healthy Life Radio Network.
Timeless information for your self-care and health. HRNradio.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Powell to the People. Wayne Powell here, and I'm with Deanne Chase of the Chase Law Group. And I was just thinking, maybe I should protect that theme song so someone else doesn't steal it. But then I was thinking, well, I don't know who might want it anyway.
Who wants
maybe
to be called Powell to the People?
Yeah. I want to do a quick programming note or a public service announcement, but I want to announce that the 27th annual King Harbor Holiday Boat Parade is Saturday, December 8th, and it's at the King Harbor Marina in Redondo Beach, California. I have to say California in case you're listening elsewhere in the nation. The Grand Marshal is Ted Lang, or is it Lange? I've heard it pronounced both ways, but Ted Lang, who starred in The Love Boat.
Oh, I remember that show.
And he's also a director, producer, and writer, and I understand a fabulous all-around guy, but he's going to be the Grand Marshal. And at 4:30 is the paddle craft vehicles, which includes stand-up paddle boards and, you know, that. And it's really great seeing them dressed up as Santa or Santa's elves. And then at 5:30 are the boats. And if you haven't seen it, you have to. I mean, they're all lit up. And I've been on the lead boat a number of times. One time by accident, before the parade started, we were having hors d'oeuvres and whatever. And the next thing, it's like, this boat is shaking. I look out, and it's like, oh, I'm on the lead boat. You know, if you want to see it, there's free bleacher seating at Moonstone Park, which is by the inner seawall. And if you don't know where that is, it's not a problem. All you have to do is go to kingharborboatparade.org. And the best part about it is everything is free. There is a hotel that has some events, and they're charging for that. But this is, well, as my parents used to always say, the best things in life are free. But the important thing is it's a great event, and there's a number of sponsors that put on the event. Unfortunately, time doesn't permit saying them all, but if you want to see all of the great sponsors, including the City of Redondo Beach and the King Harbor Yacht Club, go to kingharborboatparade.org. Okay, let's get back to business. I like that. We talked about contracts, but then there's one form of contract that's the employment contract. And also, that's very important because when it comes to payroll taxes and liability and other things, There's a distinction as to whether an individual is an employee or an independent contractor. Mm-hmm. Talk about that.
It's a really hot area that's been ever changing and evolving over the past, you know, several years. And it's been changing, particularly here in the state of California, but it also at the national level with the IRS. And so there's this classification of someone who is either an independent contractor or an employee. And so that's always the dilemma, particularly for small businesses. When they're starting up, they feel like, well, I'm not quite ready to hire an employee, but I'm going to hire this person as an independent contractor to perform these services for my business. And unfortunately, the presumption is that that person performing the services for your business is an employee. And so the classification of someone as an independent contractor is becoming more and more remote. And in fact, the California Supreme Court came out with a new ABC test in April of this year as far as what is an independent contractor or an employee. But essentially it comes down to if you hire someone to perform services that are, you know, virtually the same as what you're performing in your business, in your daily business operations, that person's an employee. So in light of that, I would have people come to me and say, I want to have an independent contractor contract, and I would look to draft a contract that fits within the confines of where you can truly call someone an independent contractor. But oftentimes I end up in the circumstances of telling you, oh, unfortunately, this person and the people that you've been working with are actually employees, and so we need to take action. Excuse me, to document that relationship as an employment relationship. And the form of that agreement is essentially an employee handbook.
So if someone is subject to your control and supervision and they're using your facilities and your tools and all of those things, they're pretty much an employee, not an independent contractor.
Well, that the essence of control for many, many years was the test for determining if you controlled the activities, right? And so at the IRS level, a lot of those, there's a 20-factor test at the IRS level on whether that person is an employer or independent contractor. And a lot of the things you just mentioned will lean towards whether they're an independent contractor or an employee. But in light of this new test, it's not a matter of control as much as the services the individual is providing. So that's why I recommend that if my clients are hiring people to perform services for their business, that the people they're hiring have their own business entity. It seems like a pretty clear black and white line. If they have their own LLC or corporation, they, you know, perform services for other people, you know, and it helps if they're outside, if they perform a service different from what you provide. An easy one is to say, you know, you own a fitness gym and you hire a plumber, or you own a dental office and you hire a plumber, right? Mm-hmm. That's really clean.
Yeah.
But if you hire someone to perform administrative services, that person's likely an employee.
And one of the key differences is if the person is categorized as an employee, you have had better pay employer payroll taxes and Medicare and Social Security and all of that, those things, or the IRS will be after you.
That's right. And if you misclassify people and you call them an independent contractor and they're truly an employee, you can be subject to back taxes and penalties and a lot of things like that. So, and if you have someone who's truly an employee, you also need to have workers' compensation insurance.
That's the big one, yeah.
That's a biggie. Mm-hmm.
And especially if someone gets injured on the job or in the performance of whatever it is they're doing for you.
That's right. They're going to make a claim.
Okay, so let's talk about, and this also, we were talking about contracts. This is also one component, but you do a lot of real estate advising, and, you know, obviously real estate involves contracts, but there's things like commercial leasing, real estate investments, purchases. Talk about that.
So our real estate practice group is headed up by Carol Glover. She's a local real estate attorney. So Carol and I work together on the real estate matters for our firm. And we handle, you know, a broad range of real estate services. So a lot of times we help our clients, for example, when they're leasing their own space, their commercial space. We work with a lot of clients who buy the buildings that they're operating, particularly a lot of professionals, like we work with a lot of dentists. They will oftentimes buy the building that they're, you know, they have their practice in or their business in, and then they will then, you know, lease it back to their professional practice, for example. So we help clients who are buying properties. We help them, you know, with reviewing the commercial leases. We also work with a lot of people who are real estate investors. So, you know, you have a commercial, a lot of like real estate investment, second homes, properties that are being rented out. You know, then we look at, you know, should you have an LLC for that property? And should we transfer the title into the LLC for liability protection purposes? So we advise on those things.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, I have a couple more questions regarding real estate, but first we have to take a quick commercial break.
Okay.
And we'll be right back. You're listening to Powell to the People on the Healthy Life Radio Network.
Your source for timeless natural health talk, HRNradio.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Powell to the People. Wayne Powell here, and I'm with Deanne Chase of the Chase Law Group. Well, it's interesting. Unlike any most of my other shows, I'm getting a number of text messages or actually emails with questions. Obviously, people that didn't hire an attorney and now are wondering what to do.
Some curiosity, did we?
Yeah. So there is one that really piqued my interest. And it says a customer or is it a competitor made false assertions about their business, and they did it on Yelp, and they want to know what they can do to remove it. It actually sounds like a Manhattan Beach City Council candidate that made some false accusations about me, and we're not even in campaign season. But I don't know, what would somebody do if someone on Yelp says some things about their business or the product, goods, or services that they sell that are not true?
Well, Yelp has, and we've helped a lot of clients with situations like that. They get a review that they believe to be false. You know, Yelp has certain guidelines on what are not appropriate for reviews. So you would take a look at the Yelp guidelines on that. For example, you can't have, you know, someone who was an owner of the business or I think a competitor or what have you, you know, making up a false review. But unfortunately, Yelp really doesn't like to get involved in these sort of circumstances. And you have to keep in mind that what that person says may not be true, but you need to respond to that review promptly. But you also need to keep in mind that you're not really talking to that person who made that false review. You're really talking to anybody else who's reading the reviews, right? And say, you know, oh, thank you for your feedback or blah, 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 or something generic, but say, you know, we disagree with what you've put here or what have you. I mean, the first thing is your public image, right, is to preserve your public image by immediately responding to it. And then secondarily is whether or not there's anything that's actually defamatory, in which case, you know, sometimes we'll send a letter directly to that person, you know, immediately refrain from making these statements, remove the statement, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
That sometimes works. It can sometimes backfire, you know, where now and then they add, and now they're threatening to sue me for exercising my First Amendment rights, for example. So it's all about, at that point in time when you get a bad review or a false review, it's really about your public image and how you want to handle that.
Mm-hmm. So going back to businesses in general, sometimes businesses acquire other businesses or they are, you know, the subject of an acquisition or there's a merger or sometimes there's a bifurcation, a separation of companies.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're talking about contracts. Those are things that should perhaps be provided for in the contract, or if you're going to engage in, you know, those type of transactions, you should have a contractual document that governs those transactions.
Absolutely. Whenever someone is selling a business or buying a business, you want to keep in mind who's going to be responsible for the liabilities relating to the business and when. So, you know, you want to say if the existing business that for example you represent. We represent a buyer who's buying a business. We generally would recommend, for example, you create a separate new entity to buy the assets only of the business that you're acquiring. And then that way you're not assuming any of the liabilities of the business except for what you decide you want to assume. So if they have any pre-existing contracts, if they have a lease, for example, you can negotiate, for example, that your purchase of the business is contingent upon, you know, a negotiation with the landlord where you either get an assignment of the existing lease or you get a new lease that you like, whatever it may be. So really, really critical to have that in, you know, those agreements in writing. And sometimes you'll have a business broker that will say, oh, well, here, use this form. But the problem with those forms is it's a lot, there's a lot of boilerplate in them, and the boilerplate doesn't necessarily serve you well. So if you're working with a broker, the brokers are really wonderful for helping you to find a business to purchase. They're helpful by, you know, telling you whether or not that's a market value or what have you, the value of the business. But you should have an attorney review the purchase and sale contract.
And then also the upfront documents, depending on the form of business, but having articles of incorporation and bylaws, things like that are very important as well.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
And those would also perhaps dictate what happens in the event of, you know, well, any one of a number of things, but mainly
a lot of things can happen.
Mergers and acquisitions or, you know, change in ownership or, you know, you name it. And that's why someone really needs to see a good business attorney.
Well, it's important, especially, again, if you're on the buying side, then you need to do your due diligence to make sure that you know what you're getting into, right? So, you know, when you're buying a business, you would absolutely want to know what the corporate formation is of the existing business, whether they're a corporation or an LLC. You'd want to see their governing documents because you want to know that, that the person signing the agreement has the authority to sell the business, right? Mm-hmm. So that's one key component is to look at the articles, to look at their, you know, statements of information that anybody can go to the California Secretary of State website and they can look up any business, business entity and tell who the managers or members are in an LLC or who the presidents, you know, who the officers and directors are of a corporation.
Mm-hmm.
Really important.
That's all public records.
That's public record.
Yeah.
It is. Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, I'm now going to put you on the spot with some questions.
Okay.
First one is, what is the biggest challenge that new and mature businesses face?
I think it's keeping up with the changing laws because people go into business because they're good at their skill. They, you know, they want to help people. They want to engage in their service or, you know, they're excited about their product. But it's unfortunately keeping up with a lot of the laws that I hear a lot of frustration by business owners. So, and particularly keeping up on employment laws. So if people have employees, it's a matter of, you know, again, like I talked about earlier, really documenting your employment relationship with your employees. So you need to have a good employee manual that sets forth what the expectations and understandings are. And then you need to have regular ongoing, you know, team meetings, and you need to, if you have that problem employee, it's really important to document that, to actually sit down with the employee and have a meeting and say, these are the issues that we're having. You know, I want to let you know that this is what we're, you know, what's going on, and to, you know, if at all possible, have the employee sign off on it, and you sign off on it as a business owner. Sometimes it helps if you have someone, you know, who's involved in your human resources department to sit down with you. But to have that in the file, because what I see is the frustration that my business owners and professional practice owners have is they get to the point of frustration where they like, I want to fire this person, you know, tomorrow. And they're mm-hmm. calling me on Thursday. I want to let this person go on Friday because they've been late and late and late and they don't follow my directions. And I say, well, okay, but have you documented that? And they said, well, I told them. And I'm like, well, unfortunately, that's not enough. Because in the state of California, it's what's called an at-will state, meaning hypothetically, an employer could terminate an employee at any time for any reason. But as a practical matter, you need to document the basis for terminating someone's employment or else you're going to get sued. Right.
Sure.
And so I think a lot of employers are walking around kind of scared. They're a little bit, you know, they're at the mercy of their employees. And the important thing is just you have a good program in place and you document and document. And if you have to let someone go, you have to let them go.
So written documentation of progressive discipline, perhaps, and therefore there's a record. So it didn't look like it was arbitrary and capricious. There was good reason. In a couple of months, I'll have my usual CPA that'll be advising people on, you know, as we approach tax season, you know, changes in the tax laws. Or actually, should be before the end of the year. There are things that should be done. I'm going to ask you a question, then we're going to have to hold the thought because we're going to have to go to a commercial break.
Okay.
Things that businesses should be thinking about for the new year. And we'll come back to that. But first, you're listening to Powell to the People on the Healthy Life Radio Network.
The Bright Side of Talk. HealthyLife.net.
HealthyLife.net, the positive radio network.
It's Powell to the People. Welcome back. You're listening to Powell to the People. I'm here with Deanne Chase of the Chase Law Group, and we've learned so much thus far. But one of the things we started out the show was talking about, you want to do things up front, like have written agreements that dictate certain things, particularly in the event that, you know, things go south. Now, usually when things go south, then we're talking about litigation. And, of course, you were a litigator. But sometimes a more preferred method is mediation. Mm-hmm. And you do a lot of mediation. Talk about that.
Sure. So I am opening up a new practice area or a new area related to my practice, which is mediation services. As a litigator, I was a litigation attorney for over 10 years, and then I've had my practice for another 10. And I work with a lot of partnerships in my practice, like I said, going in and going out. And they are oftentimes like a marriage. They're very, very nasty partnerships when they fail. So I'm a huge proponent of mediation. Basically, what everybody needs to understand, mediation is a non-binding, function where you take your claims to a neutral third party, and the neutral third party, the mediator, hears each side out and then tries to help the parties to arrive at a binding settlement agreement. So the settlement agreement that you walk out of mediation with is a binding document. So it's different from arbitration, where basically, you know, you sit down in arbitration, the arbitrator is usually a retired judge, and you submit it to the arbitrator, and the arbitrator makes an actual decision, winner or loser, right? And arbitration is outside of a courtroom. So mediation is basically to say, you know, you come to, you know, you have a dispute with a business partner, you want to work it out. I draft every partnership agreement. I have a mediation first clause saying that if you have a dispute, you go to mediation first before anyone runs off to a courthouse. And so I've participated in hundreds of mediation, and I've found quite often mediation will resolve claims. Sometimes not always the first time, but sometimes it takes maybe a second session of mediation. But in the end, it really avoids a lot of controversy. So I'm really excited about being able to offer mediation services and to help people resolve their claims and their disputes.
And when things go to protracted litigation, then it gets very expensive. So if it can be mediated or arbitrated, that's probably much more preferable than litigation.
Absolutely. And a lot of times, if you file a lawsuit and you go to court, sometimes they'll send you to mediation anyway, or the judges will try to do, you know, settlement conferences and that sort of thing. But our courthouses are really overrun, and the trial calendars are tight, and there are a lot of extensive deadlines. And frankly, litigation is very expensive as well. You have to pay your attorney, and that's it. You know, side note is you need to make sure you have a good contract if you have a dispute, because you don't get your attorney's fees back if you win, even if you win your case, if you don't have an agreement in writing to say you get your attorney's fees.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really important. And then you had mentioned before the break as well about what people should be doing for the new year.
That was going to be my next question.
Oh, okay.
But,
I didn't want to.
But yeah, talk about that.
Segue about that?
Sure.
I didn't want to miss that. that discussion, because it is really important, you know, as people are meeting with their tax advisors this time of year, is people who are currently sole proprietors, if they want to look at perhaps incorporating their business, doing an LLC or corporation, this is a good time of year to talk to your CPA while you have their attention, right? You're sitting down and say, you know, should I consider forming a business entity for my business? But I will say the most important thing right now is do not form a business entity now, November or December of this year. For next year, you know, wait until, there's a timing issue, basically. You need to be careful about timing. If, for example, someone says, I want to have a new business for next year, a new business entity for next year, so I'm going to file it with the California Secretary of State now, mm-hmm. You'll be subject to $800 for the remainder of 2018, for example, if you're an LLC, because an LLC in the state of California has a minimum $800 per year franchise tax. Mm. So you would end up paying $800 for the rest of 2018, and then you'd have to pay another $800 by the beginning of 2019 for an LLC. So there is a little gap in the tax code that you have to be very, very, very careful not to miss it, or else you'll pay another $800 for this year, that you can file your articles at the end of December to form an entity for next year. But I do recommend you talk to an attorney about that, because you want to make sure you hit it right, and you want to talk to your accountant about that as well.
Yes, and also the form of incorporation, or the form of the business entity, mm-hmm. That has varying tax significance as well. So part of the decision is based on taxation of a business. So all of those things, you should see a good business attorney and mm-hmm. perhaps a good CPA or tax professional as well.
Absolutely. Yeah, we work very closely with our clients' tax advisors. So we make sure that whatever we recommend from a liability perspective complies with the client's tax needs. So we'll normally get on the phone with the tax advisor and say, okay, this is what, you know, I put it out there. So I usually like an LLC structure because if there's not as much maintenance to an LLC as there is to a small corporation, for example. And sometimes the tax advisor will say, oh, I really want them to be taxed as an S corp, for example, which is just a tax election. So we just decide, well, can we do an LLC taxed as an S corp, which is possible. A lot of people don't know that. And then that way you get out of all the maintenance requirements of a corporation. Or sometimes the tax advisor says, no, I really want them to be an actual corporation. So we file articles of incorporation. Small corporations involve bylaws and stock certificates and meeting minutes and the shareholders and the directors and a lot of paperwork. But we do that as well.
So an S corp versus a C corp, there's big differences. Well, I want to shift gears a bit and talk about your mission to educate entrepreneurs and your upcoming national speakers tour.
I'm very excited about it. In my daily practice, I work with a lot of entrepreneurs and business owners, and a lot of times people are coming to me and they say, well, I'm not quite ready to pay for a lawyer's services, so I'm going to go online and I'm going to fill out some online form, without naming any names, and, and then as they're filling out the forms, like, I don't really know how to answer that question, or they know in the back of their mind that they don't really know all the answers, but they feel like they don't want to pay a lawyer, and they're just going to do it themselves and figure it out later. So I've been invited by Bill Walsh, Power Team International, to go on his national speaker tour to talk at their small business expos about issues relating to entrepreneurs and mm-hmm. and business owners. And it's basically about providing them with the information they need now to at least give them the information to make the right decisions before they get to the point where they're going to need the services of a lawyer.
Okay. Well, what other important things perhaps should we talk about that is of interest to, you know, current or prospective businesses?
Well, I think that, like I mentioned the expansion of mediation services mm-hmm. to my practice, and I'm going to be putting on a lot more programs and talks, even locally. I'll be doing some events, and I think December 9th, of this year, 2018. We are in the process of putting on, putting together a talk with Bill Walsh, who will be joining us. So kind of keep your eyes out for that. And the talk is basically with regard to entrepreneurs and small business issues. And, you know, talking about the power of a legal structure, how to create and protect your brand, hidden threats, you know, your employees, your customers, your business partners. So a lot of those issues are things I'm going to be talking a lot about.
All right. Well, we're getting near the end of the show. We'll be right back to wrap things up. You're listening to Powell to the People on the Healthy Life Radio Network.
Radio your way. HealthyLife.net.
Welcome back to Powell to the People. That's all the time we have. I want to thank my guest, Deanne Chase. This has been very informative. Next week, we have Brian Decato, Senior Vice President of the Bay Club, and I look forward to another interesting show. I want to thank you for listening to Powell to the People, and always remember, power is the ability to do good things for others and make your community and the world a better place. This is Wayne Powell sending you positive thoughts and good wishes. Have a great week. We'll see you back next Monday, same time, same place. Until then, bye for now.